Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. It is Monday, June the 19th. Again, thank you for listening. Good morning, Ed Battagliano.
Good morning, Tim Wildman.
Good morning, Fred Jackson.
Good morning. Good Monday to you.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back in the saddle. Had our June Washington, D.C. / Mount Vernon tour last week with 55 most of all of them were supporters of American Family Association.
Spiritual Heritage Tour.
Yeah. Yeah, we went to all the sites in D.C., and then I also went to George Washington to Mount Vernon on Saturday. Wonderful folks. Had a great time, great weather. Didn't have any of the smoke.
Oh, it had all moved off?
Right. You know, previously, the week before, Washington, D.C. had been affected by the Canadian, Canadian wildfires. I don't make the news. I just report it. And the fires did come down. The fire smoke did come down from Canada.
You let the cinders fall where they may, you know.
Yeah. And New York City, and we know what happened there with the thick smoke. But anyway, that wasn't there. We had a great weather time. And so, great time to be with our folks who support our ministry. And we do that twice a year. September's sold out. So folks want to go with us, they have to wait till next year, 2024.
Or maybe you should just go once a month.
I couldn't handle that, man.
That's a lot of work for those tours.
Yeah, it is. All right. So what was the top story you guys talked about last week while I was away?
Fred and I talked hockey for most of the week.
Is that why we don't have any listeners left, except in Minnesota?
Now, Ed behaved himself.
I did.
Okay.
There was no smoking rabbits.
No rabbits on fire.
No rabbits on fire.
I thought about this. When Tim goes away, then the people who get upset listening to us talk will aim their fire at Ed.
Yes,
they do.
Because he provokes them.
Yeah, I don't do exactly what they think I should do. Listen, I read some of these comments on Facebook, right. And you know what it reminds me of? Right. Pastoring a church. Back when I pastored.
What?
Gripe. No, not all of you.
Right. Obviously. We love all of our Facebook
We do.
Folks.
We love our. It's like family.
Yeah.
It's like family. There's people in my
disagreements.
There's people in my family that, you know, that mm-hmm. don't like the way I do things.
Right.
I ignore them.
Right.
They ignore me.
All right. Speaking of Facebook and our own live streaming service, if people want to join us on the internet, what can they do there, Ed?
Well, they can go to Facebook Live mm-hmm. and click through when you search for Today's Issues. That's the name of this program. And you can watch the live video stream. You can do that for a lot of our talk radio programs. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to our own streaming platform. That's streaming.afa.net. Streaming.afa.net. And you can set up an account. It's very simple to do that. And then you can not only watch the live stream video for this program, there's a lot of great content, video content, that you can access there.
Absolutely. Speaking of the weather, we talked about the smoke that impacted the eastern seaboard last couple of weeks from the Canadian fires. Fred, also a lot of action in the in the southwest, or I guess the what you call the heartland and the southeast, right?
Yeah, last week with northern Texas, Samaritan's Purse, other relief organizations are getting into northern Texas where they had tornado problems in the last 10 days. Now, last night, in the last 24 hours, we just found out this morning there was a tornado in Jasper County, Mississippi. At least one person killed there.
And overnight?
Overnight.
Okay.
This has just been a string of bad weather, including going through our home base here in Tupelo. It's just waves and waves of this. And apparently that's the way it's going to be for the foreseeable future.
Did you see the size of some of the hail from
softball size, not baseball?
Saw some in Texas. Are you talking about Texas? No, or
Mississippi, I know that.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yes. I couldn't believe it. Yes. When I saw the size of the hail. You're talking about, well, anything above like a golf ball will do serious damage.
Yes.
The roofs and cars.
I don't care what your roof is made out of. You get hit by hail that's that size, it's going to be some serious damage.
Yeah.
And Mississippi, there's still about 49,000 people without power in the Jackson Central area of the state.
Yeah.
They've been hit hard. Lots of rain, just endless rain.
Yeah. It's just, you know, this kind of weather is usually reserved for the spring.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Yes.
April, we're approaching summer in a couple of days.
Right. April, May. Mm-hmm. You know, if people who live in the heartland and the South, they're used to, and some of the Midwest states, they're used to, you know, thunderstorms and tornadic weather and flooding and things of that nature. But June, middle of June now, here we are. It's usually moved past that by now.
Yep.
All right. Next story.
All right. Well, our U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, finally had his visit this weekend with Chinese leaders. You remember it was scheduled several months ago, but then that Chinese, what was called a weather balloon, turned out to be a spy balloon. But the Biden administration let that balloon just cruise across the United States, taking pictures of all our military establishments. And then when the Chinese were through doing that, then we took that balloon down over the Atlantic. So that kind of delayed things. The relationships between the United States and China, one Chinese official described it this weekend as being probably the worst it has been in years. And that is because a lot of people say that China believes they have a very weak opponent now in the Biden administration. Mike Gallagher is chairman of the sitting committee, House Committee on China. This was his assessment of Blinken's visit to China this weekend. It's cut number 7.
But the Chinese Communist Party also gave Blinken an ultimatum. They said America needs to choose between dialogue and confrontation and cooperation and conflict, which is, of course, absurd because there's only one side here choosing confrontation and risking conflict. There's only one side bullying and threatening Taiwan, one side committing genocide, one side still covering up a devastating pandemic. So we have to push back on this message from the Chinese Communist Party that they're somehow anything less, that somehow anything less than cooperation with the world order they desire is choosing conflict.
Yeah, and part of that world order they desire, Chinese leadership is meeting with basically a Venezuelan dictator. They met last week with Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the Palestinians. They're becoming the broker, or want to become the broker, of Middle East peace. These are things where America stood strong, has been the leader through the years, but a lot of people are starting to get worried. China is seeing itself as the arbitrator of world peace, and they're making alliances with people that normally we would be very concerned about, but the Biden administration appears to be just letting it go.
As a worldwide superpower, this is arbitrary, you know, subjective, I know, but it seems like to me China's pulled even with the United States, or maybe ahead. In terms of, by that I mean worldwide influence. And because the Chinese are all over Africa.
Yes.
With buying up minerals and all these, what would you call them? Well, minerals, basically.
Natural resources.
Natural resources. As you say, they play a big part in the Middle East now, buying oil from Middle Eastern countries. And what do you think, Ed?
Well, they can't project military power worldwide like the U.S. can. However, they are doing the next best thing, all right? In terms of their, I would say the next best thing from the perspective of how do you advance China's stature in the world. So they have expanded their military to an extremely high degree in terms of the Western Pacific, being able to defend themselves if they get in a war with the U.S. and being able to push their weight, throw their weight around in their own region. Now, they can't send carrier fleets and large-scale, you know, combat divisions into Europe or anything like that, but what they are doing is they are trying to hem the United States in. That's why they're coming to our own hemisphere, Venezuela. We were talking about potential spy base in Cuba. And then they're going, and this is very crafty, they're going to places like the Middle East, obviously Muslim, with the exception of Israel. And I think what they're doing is they are going to these Muslim nations, North Africa probably too, and saying, look at the United States. Look at their current administration. They're having an entire month dedicated to homosexual pride. They put the pride flag on the White House, didn't even elevate their own American flag like their flag code states must happen if the U.S. flag is with a group of other flags. They are promoting into your nation, Muslim nation, this radical transgender ideology, this homosexual ideology, and they are not respecting your beliefs. And I think that's going to win people over. I think that's going to win nations over to they may not like everything about China, but at least China's not doing in their countries and doing through the United Nations what the U.S. is doing, which is an affront. We talked about in our story meeting the same thing with a lot of these African countries. The U.S. is pushing the far-left ideology, and they're not winning people over. So China's saying, fine, we'll do it, and we'll influence other countries.
This is kind of breaking news. Antony Blinken, our Secretary of State, just wrapping up his meeting with President Xi of China. And I want you to have a listen to this clip. If I'm hearing right here, he said the U.S. does not support Taiwan independence. Now, I want you to have a listen to this. This is one of the...
You haven't heard this before either.
I have.
This just happened?
This just happened. So it's cut 16.
On Taiwan, I reiterated the longstanding U.S. One China policy. That policy has not changed. It's guided by the Taiwan Relations Act, the three joint communiques, the six assurances. We do not support Taiwan independence. We remain opposed to any unilateral changes to the status quo by either side. We continue to expect the peaceful resolution of cross-strait differences.
Now, who was that?
That's our Secretary of State, Antony Blinken.
Oh, that was him?
Yes.
Okay.
Apparently he had a news conference after a meeting with President Xi.
Okay, he said maintain status quo, and then he said, but we're not for Taiwan's independence. What does that mean?
So this is part of the difficulty of U.S. policy on Taiwan, is they have tried over, 1949 is when the communists took over in China. The U.S. has tried to maintain a little bit of a balancing act. The communist Chinese believe that Taiwan is Chinese property, that it's a rebellious province. The U.S. has, I think, behind the scenes told China, don't try to take it, because that would be an act. We would enter into the conflict if you tried to do that. However, publicly, they have said there is a one China policy, and they expect mainland China and the Taiwanese government to work out their differences. But after in terms of reiterating this after a meeting with the Chinese leadership, I don't know what's going on in terms of this administration. Listen, I wouldn't be surprised if the Chinese, all these allegations about Biden family business in China, okay, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't have something, at least on Hunter. That was not anything totally new, but in the context of meeting with Xi Jinping, I wouldn't be surprised if he said, you better come out and make it clear that you're not advocating Taiwan's independence. I don't even think Taiwan does that in terms of declaration.
I'm sorry, did you say have something on Hunter?
I'm just playing the part of the show's liberal.
So there's something else we don't know about Hunter Biden?
Well,
after the laptop
from hell. And I didn't want to say anything about Joe Biden himself.
Right. Big guy, you mean?
Big guy. Because, listen, the Chinese play to win. And if they have something on the Biden family, I wouldn't be surprised if they say, if you do this, geopolitically speaking,
right,
we'll ruin you. We'll release whatever we've got.
Your poll numbers will go down below 10.
Yes.
Percent approval rating in your own country.
Yeah.
If you do so. Well, in all seriousness, that you know, you could be right. Who knows? But we do know that Hunter Biden, when his dad was vice president, remember the story about him, and it was documented, he flew over there on Air Force Two, I guess,
yeah,
with his dad, who was VP, and he went over there to broker business deals for himself. That's what he was doing over there.
But Tim, that's unfair. Joe Biden has made it clear he knew nothing about Hunter Biden's business.
Well, now, if he told me that today, I might believe him.
Oh, yeah.
Huh? In the state of mind he's in today. But
Nobody believes. They flew all the way over to China, and Joe Biden never asked his son about business.
No.
That's absurd.
We all know that's not true. But to your point, and it's a serious one, you have to wonder sometimes, well, do the Chinese have something that they're holding over the head of the Biden administration,
right,
so that they're able to do what they want to with impunity?
Yep.
Short of, I guess, invading Taiwan, but who knows? That may happen
right
sometime soon. But I did find this interesting. If you can believe, you know, what the Chinese say, you can't. You have to. What did Reagan say? Trust and verify.
Trust and verify.
I did see a quote from one of the top military leaders of China, maybe the top military leader. He was in the news about a week ago, 10 days ago, and he said any kind of military conflict or war between the United States and China would be global, would be catastrophic.
Yes.
And that is true, mm-hmm, for the world. So neither country, I think, wants to engage militarily, but each country, the U.S. and China, I'm talking about, has its own interest globally that they need to protect as well. Go ahead.
I think one thing for sure is that the Chinese do regard the Biden administration as weaker than the Trump administration. You remember when that spy balloon, so-called weather,
yeah,
turned spy? The Biden administration, first thing they said, well, this has been happening for a long time. They had
even under Trump.
Yes, that was wrong. And then we had the news in the last few weeks about the spy station in Cuba. The Biden administration said initially, oh, that's been going on for years. But they had to walk that back last week. It has not been going on for years.
Mm-hmm.
So there is clear evidence that China believes it can really push the envelope right now on what it's doing with regards to military establishments, what it's doing with regards to spying on American installations, and they just don't think Biden is going to kick back very hard.
Which makes the next 18 months or so,
yes,
very dangerous.
Yes.
Because the Chinese, unless they think that Joe Biden is a cakewalk to get reelected, which I don't think anybody does, okay, they know they risk a flipping of the party in control of the White House. And you do not want a strong conservative in the White House directing U.S. foreign policy and military engagements if you want to take Taiwan.
Yep.
And if you want to take Taiwan and go through.
But do you think that, I know we are getting into a little bit of speculation here, but maybe a lot, but do you think the American people would support a military engagement over Taiwan? In other words, do you think American people would support us going to full-scale war with China over Taiwan?
I don't.
Okay, I don't either.
I don't.
So China knows that, probably. You know what I'm
saying? That's why I'm saying if they're going to do something, they're going to have to do it before the election in 2024.
Yeah. Anyway, we live in perilous times.
Yeah,
that we do. You guys talked about the big guy and the whole Hunter Biden investigation. You know, it's really interesting. There are some reporters now that are really trying to, whenever they get an opportunity, to push Joe Biden on responding to the whole Burisma allegations that are coming out.
You're talking about the Ukrainian, yeah, energy company.
Yes.
That was paying Hunter Biden $80,000 a month.
Yes.
To
his expertise.
Play video games.
And possibly millions of dollars to the Biden family. Because remember, Joe Biden, vice president, went over there. I'm going to get that prosecutor that's looking into Burisma fired. And he said, sure enough, by the day's end, he did. All right. Joe Biden getting testy over the weekend. He was asked about this, and he called it a dumb question to ask me about Burisma. All right. But you know what? James Comer, who heads up the House Oversight Committee, he is kind of leading the press against the Biden family and the allegations there with regards to how much they benefited financially when Joe Biden was vice president. He is not giving up. Cut number six.
I think we've done as much as we could do with the obstacles we've had to overcome. No one thought I would get bank records. No one thought we would get access to the Treasury Cabinet's suspicious activity reports, but we have. We would not take no for an answer. We kept fighting, and we prevailed. What we know from our informants and from our sources in the FBI is that the FBI never investigated this.
Yeah, they're just going to continue on this. They're going to continue to haul FBI people before committees. They're going to swear them in, and they're going to ask the questions. Last week, I think it was the deputy FBI director that was before a Senate committee, and they were pressed by Ted Cruz. They were pressed by Hawley, and this deputy director said, "I don't want to talk about it." Now, if a deputy director of the FBI said, the response is, when asked about these things, I'm not going to talk about it. You know, there's dirt underneath the carpet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That'd be a good country song right there. There's dirt. There's dirt underneath the carpet.
Yep.
Honey.
There's dirt underneath the carpet.
I think we're onto something right there. what do you think about this? This is intensifying. I'm talking about the dig into... Did Biden?
Yeah, this has. Did
the Biden family make millions and millions of dollars against the law?
The reason this is a shameful situation is that Congress shouldn't have to be doing this. The Republicans in the House should not have to be doing this. This is the Department of Justice's job and the FBI's job. They should be investigating this. The fact that they have refused to means that the House Republicans have to do this in order to gather this information and make the public aware of what has been happening.
Why did the FBI stall so long about letting the Republicans see those documents that weren't even classified?
Because they're damaging. They're damaging to the Biden administration.
Yes.
And
so you're saying the FBI is running cover for the Democrats?
Yeah, that's tongue-in-cheek.
That's really disappointing. The first I've heard of this.
Again, I do want to stress, if there's any FBI agents listening, that we are talking about the upper echelons of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Right.
I have faith that there are many good FBI agents.
Field agents.
Yes. I really do. I think they really want to do their job.
But the top brass seem to be political.
The top brass at the FBI are like the Praetorian Guard under the Roman Empire. Okay, the Praetorian Guard under the Roman Empire, they were charged with protecting the emperor and his family, but they became the people who determined who was going to become emperor. Yeah. And you did not want to fall out of favor like Donald Trump did, because then they go after you. And their job, this upper echelon, is to protect the Biden administration and, as you put it, run interference.
Did you see what Governor DeSantis said about this? He said he's going to systematically change the FBI and the Justice Department.
Oh, he has to.
He said move them out of Washington, D.C. and separate the FBI from the Justice Department. And in other words, there were some things that he said, deconstruct, I should say. And now some other Republicans have said the same type of thing, but he was very blunt about it. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. couple of the we were talking about the leadership at the FBI, right? And they're at odds / at war with the Republican leadership in the House of Representatives in particular. And this has been going on for a couple, 3 years or longer. FBI Director James Comey, uh-huh, the other day, he came out and said, he was doing an interview, and he said it like this. He said, it's got to be Joe Biden who's elected president in 2024. He said it just like that. Yeah. Huh? He said it just like that. It's got to be. He said it's got to be Joe Biden. To me, a former FBI director does not need to be speaking. He needs to say, I have my own political views, but I am I still am perceived as a part of the agency, the FBI I'm talking about, and I won't comment on who my pick is to be the next president of the United States. But he just came right out and said it. Well, that fits precisely with how he handled the Hillary Clinton
right
email situation with her server being in her basement. Yeah, he let her off the hook there, which is what a lot of Republicans are saying. Hey, you didn't do anything to Hillary Clinton, and now you're going after former President Trump.
Yeah.
But there are some distinguishing differences between the two cases. But basically, that's what the Republicans are saying, and you can understand that. Anyway, I was mentioning before the break the Governor DeSantis of Florida had commented on the FBI, and I said he has this idea, does DeSantis, to break up the FBI. He says, quote, we're not going to this. Obviously, DeSantis would have to be elected president, and he's behind now in the polls. We've got 8 months to go on the Republican side. We're behind Trump, I'm talking about. But he said this, one of the selling points he's trying to communicate to people is voters is this. DeSantis said this, we're not going to let all this power accumulate in Washington. We're going to break up these agencies. And he said that some of the problematic components of the DOJ be uprooted and shipped to other parts of the country, end quote. What do you think about that, Ed?
I think the power in Washington, D.C. has to be broken up.
Even physically.
Now, I'm not sure about, the FBI, the Department of Justice. It seems like you would need that in the seat of power. But all these alphabet agencies, I think they should all be dispersed to other parts of the country, Department of Education, FDA, all of it should be dispersed, because first of all, that helps break up some of the influence of lobbyists, but also it kind of breaks the spell of that echo chamber where you get these people who go to work in the bureaucracy and they're there their entire lives and they're completely unresponsive to the American people or to who is in power in Washington, which political party. And plus, it would be a boon to the economies of some of these other states. If you move the Department of Interior to a western state, then that, you know, it's like having a college town in your city, but having a college. And you being a college town, you are bringing economic benefit instead of making Northern Virginia one of the wealthiest parts of the country and one of the most liberal. You disperse that and you find out who really wants to serve their country, mm-hmm, and who wants to have a career job in the
I saw over the weekend where former Vice President Pence, who's also running on the Republican side in the primaries, he said he would fire Christopher Wray, the FBI director, uh-huh, if he were elected. Talking about Pence, Governor DeSantis said the same thing. I don't know where Nikki Haley or some of the others stand, but they said basically we will fire FBI Director Wray. Ironically, former President Trump says he's not committed to that. Huh. He remember that interview?
Yeah.
He says, well, I would have to we'll wait and see how Ray does, finishes out, I guess, his term.
I think Christopher Ray should be fired. You could have a laundry list of reasons for that. But this this action in terms of the 1023, yeah, this form, mm-hmm, and not wanting to turn it over to Congress, refusing to do it, we're going to redact everything, we're not even going to tell you about the possibility of these recordings of Biden making deals with Ukrainian officials and Burisma. That kind of activity, that in and of itself should be enough to fire the FBI director.
All right, next story, Fred.
Well, last week we saw very visibly with cameras rolling, former President Trump appeared in a courtroom in Miami, faced a 37-count indictment with regards to the documents at his home there in Mar-a-Lago. If he thought he was going to get any support from his former Attorney General, Bill Barr, think again. The relationship between those two men is not good,
right,
and that is putting it mildly. And Bill Barr, on the weekend, was on Face the Nation, and he was not afraid at all to give his assessment of where the former president stands with regards to those documents. Cut number three.
How strong is the special counsel's case on obstruction specifically?
Well, it's very strong because a lot of the evidence comes from his own lawyers. And furthermore, there's evidence of him saying things that are completely incompatible with any idea that this was an innocent document dispute.
Do you believe he lied to the Justice Department?
Do I personally believe it? Yes, I do.
And do you believe that he continues to claim that he has all these privileges and rights under the Presidential Records Act? Is he mischaracterizing the act?
Absolutely. The legal theory by which he gets to take battle plans and sensitive national security information as his personal papers is absurd. It's just as wacky as the legal doctrine they came up with for, you know, having the vice president unilaterally determine who won the election. The whole purpose of the statute, the Presidential Records Act, was to stop presidents from taking official documents out of the White House. It was passed after Watergate. That's the whole purpose of it. And therefore, it restricted what a president can take. It says it's purely private, that had nothing to do with the deliberations of government policy. Obviously, these documents are not purely private. It's obvious. And they're not even now arguing that it's purely private. What they're saying is the president just has sweeping discretion to say they are, even though they squarely don't fall within the definition. It's an absurd argument.
Well, that's Attorney General, former Attorney General Bill Barr, who was Trump's AG for, what, a couple of years, mm-hmm, after he fired Jeff Sessions?
Yeah.
Right. From Alabama, the senator there. Barr took over, and that's Barr commenting on his views. Of course, President Trump pleaded not guilty. Or is that what you plead? Not guilty?
Not guilty.
Okay, and he'll have his day in court, and his lawyers will present the other side of the argument right there. But I guess it comes down, it seems to me this comes down to, does a president have the right to take any and everything he wants to when he leaves the White House? I'm talking about with documents. And say they know they belong to me because I have the right to them as a president. Or is there some process you're supposed to go through in order to decide what's personal and what's the property of the government, particularly if you're something involved military secrets.
Yeah, I'm going to be very interested if they get this show on the road here and not drag out the prosecution of the president over these documents over a year's time or whatever they might decide to do. I'd be very interested in how this plays out because I have read things that seem to indicate that a president does have sweeping powers to declassify information. You hear Bill Barr here saying, well, it's only personal information, personal papers, personal documents. Well, why would you need to declassify personal documents? You know, I don't, you know, if it's personal, it's not classified almost by definition. And so I'm just very interested. I don't know the answer to this kind of disparity between what Bill Barr just laid out and what others that I've read have said about the president's sweeping powers to do it. So we'll have to wait.
Well,
and see.
Okay. Whether Mr. Trump is correct in his argument, his lawyers that I basically could take anything, right? Or Barr's right. If it's true that a president can take any and everything he wants to when leaving the White House, then we need to change that law. Huh? Because that you don't need top military secrets. I'm not saying this is what Mr. Trump did. That's the accusation. Understand me. I'm just saying the idea, to me, I do agree with Barr, the idea that you can take anything and everything you want to your home if it involves military secrets or attacks on other countries' plans of, that should be kept in a top secret at the Defense Department, at the Pentagon or something like that. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and you should enforce that law with all presidents, because my understanding is President Obama had all kinds of going way back to President Clinton, that these presidents regularly, I guess for their memoirs or to put in the presidential library, I don't know.
But see, that is personal. I agree. That is personal. I distinguish between a clipping about the inauguration ball and plans to invade Iran.
Well, yeah. However, and I agree too. Plans to invade Iran, if that's actually what we've heard that, if that's right. Actually what President Trump had in his possession, I would agree. However, if a former president who leaves office wants to write his memoirs, he's got to have documents that say, listen, I met with Benjamin Netanyahu, this is what we discussed, and you've got to have those documents.
I think you need to apply for this job. You sound passionate about it, and when presidents leave the office, Biden and whoever's next, you need to sit down and go through every single box.
Oh no! Listen, at our house we're throwing stuff out. Even my kids' school papers, they're going out in the garbage. I'm not sitting.
Okay,
no, I'm just kidding.
Some of this, but I'm not saying that Mr. Barr's professional opinion is not. I don't say he's making it up
right there.
What we just heard right there. I think he's a very serious man. I really do. But he and Trump are at a words war now, because
they don't like each other.
Well, Trump, Barr basically looked at the indictment and said on national television, if half of this is true, Trump's toast.
Yes.
That was his quote. To which Trump came back and said, oh, yeah.
Bill Barr's a great guy.
Bill Barr's lazy. He was lazy as my AG, and he's a, quote, gutless pig, end quote. So I think after Trump called Barr a gutless pig, that's when Barr came out yesterday and said, oh, I got some more to say. So they're in a war of words, is what I'm
saying. Also, by the way, I would say there may be some conflicts between the various laws that are being applied. There's an Espionage Act, which is supposed to be from the early 1900s, which is supposed to be used to go after actual traitors and spies. That has some bearing on this. And I think there's two or three different laws that maybe it cross purposes, and that may be why we're getting a difference of opinion.
Here's the one thing I don't understand. I'd like to hear somebody talk about sometime who are lawyers or constitutional lawyers, and that is this. What happened here, Trump, the National Archives says, hey, you got some boxes of classified stuff or some information we want back. And he gave a bunch of it back. Trump did, and his lawyers. Mm-hmm. Then they found out, the National Archives, they reported it to the Department of Justice. Trump had not, according to them, given them everything. He only gave them part of it. And then Mr. Trump said, well, I'm not giving you back anything else because it's mine.
Right.
I had the right. I could declassify anything just by thinking about it when I left the White House. That's what he said. So then the argument became, you know, who's right on this? Here's what I think probably would have been wise in retrospect. And Mr. Trump's lawyers go to court to say, no, we maintain the right to everything else that we're in possession of. And have this fought out in court rather than sort of force the hand of the Justice Department to put up or shut up. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
when they wanted to go after these other documents. So I don't know, but Mr. Trump will get his day in court. I don't know when that'll be. You said that'll be in 2074. Ed, is that when you said
that'll
be?
Well, listen, all this stuff is being dragged out because I do think there are political purposes in some of these prosecutions. I'm not saying there's no there. That will be determined in court. But when you have the district attorney of Manhattan, Alvin Bragg, say our second hearing on the case in New York City, the payment of supposed payment of hush money to these two women, the second hearing is going to be in December of this year, just before the Iowa caucuses and New Hampshire primary in January. That from April. That April was the first hearing. The next one's going to be in December, right before the political season kicks off. I think they're going to want to extend this so that it interrupts Trump's attempts to get the nomination.
Not going to interrupt him. He's going to make his numbers go up.
That's the way it's
every indictment,
right now,
he gets another 10 points.
Yeah.
On the support. Go ahead, Fred.
Isn't it interesting? We're talking about how diligent the DOJ seems to be in investigating the documents found at Mr. Trump's residence. Where's the investigation with regards to the documents in Biden's garage and in other places?
Well, there is a special counsel, if you want to LOL right here, go ahead. I understand. Assigned to this particular case. Let me also say this. A sitting president cannot be indicted, as I understand it, constitutionally. So whatever is going to happen or not happen to Mr. Biden regarding the classified documents that he was in possession of, well, I guess he wasn't in possession of them. That was the problem. They were in Chinatown and in the garage and everything else. That will have to be resolved. Am I right, Ed? Do you understand? After he's out of office.
Yes. Right. You can impeach a president and then have him convicted in the House impeaches. The Senate conducts the trial. You can have the president removed. But in terms of charging him with a crime, my understanding is that would have to wait for him to be out of office.
Right.
I expect any day now there will be a leak that says all that was in the documents were recipes for chocolate chip cookies.
Right.
You know.
And yoga, you know, yoga classes like Hillary Clinton.
You know what? I bet you the vast mass majority of that for in Mr. Trump's home and also in Biden's garage and in Mike Pence's clothing drawer at his house, they didn't know what this stuff was. Mm-hmm. These guys didn't pack this up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I just think maybe they ought to just say this. You get back everything, we get back everything, we'll call it a day.
Call it even.
Everybody gives back everything. But I think that's a sticking point again with President Trump. He says, no, I'm not giving it back because it's mine.
Yeah.
It's my property. And the Justice Department is saying, no, it's not. It's the property of the government. But anyway, I just thought maybe a deal like that. Hey, we'll hand that back everything. Both sides hand back everything and turn it in.
Well,
call it a day.
Yeah. When you're packing up after 4 years in the White House, I'm guessing there are documents and folders and file folders. You know how all this stuff, we're just normal people. We have houses. You develop stacks in your office. You're not sure where did I put that thing? Where is that? And then everyone's scooping all that up, throwing it in boxes because you're leaving. You lost the election. You didn't think you were. And now you've got a few months, and so everything's going into boxes. Where's that stuff that was on the credenza? I don't know.
Happens next time, if I'm president and I have to leave the White House, I'm not taking anything. Furthermore, if you're Biden, you're 82, right?
Yeah.
You don't need a bunch of more stuff in your house.
Right.
Right. So
just throw it in the back of your Corvette.
I wouldn't take anything.
It's not like he parks it out on the street.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues. Go ahead, Fred. Next
story. You know, Democratic Party likes to say, you know, they celebrate diversity. But there was a story last week saying, well, when it comes to presidential candidates, the Republican Party is doing pretty well on that front right now. They have two African-Americans who have thrown their name in, Tim Scott of South Carolina and Larry Elder. Mm-hmm. They have Nikki Haley, who is of East Indian descent.
Vivek Ramaswamy.
Vivek Ramaswamy, and now the mayor of Miami, of Cuban descent. So they're winning the battle when it comes to diversity. But you know what? That doesn't satisfy a former president.
You got an Italian in there too, Fred. You forgot to mention DeSantis.
That's right. He's Italian.
Right. So we've got boku diversity.
You got African American. You got Italian. You got
Indian. Ramaswamy, Vivek Ramaswamy, did I mention his name?
Yes, just because you like to.
Mr. Trump?
Yes.
Is of New York descent?
Yes, from that tribe.
So we got a New Yorker in there? That's their own
Chris
tribe.
Chris Christie in New Jersey.
New Jersey. Go ahead.
Anyway, all of this does not satisfy former President Barack Obama. In fact, when it comes to people like Tim Scott, in an interview that Obama was doing with David Axelrod, a former Democrat Party official, he is saying, I'm trying to put this the way Barack Obama was trying to get it across. He is saying that black conservatives really don't understand the black problem in the United States. So I want you to have a listen to the former president, Barack Obama. Cut number one.
I think there is a long history of African-American or other minority candidates within the Republican Party who will validate America and say, everything's great and we can all make it. And Nikki Haley, I think, has a similar approach.
She does.
I'm not being cynical about Tim Scott individually. I am maybe suggesting that the rhetoric of can't we all get along, that has to be undergirded with an honest accounting of our past and our present. If a Republican who may even be sincere in saying, I want us all to live together, doesn't have a plan for how do we address crippling generational poverty that is a consequence of hundreds of years of racism in the society, and we need to do something about that.
I got to tell you, I've never heard a public speaker pause between words so much. Former President Obama.
Oh.
Pause it between every. It's like a.
Well, that was an interview, I think.
It's like a period after everything he says, every word he says.
He always, even when he was speaking, sometimes he'd have that clipped kind of oratory delivery.
I need to sit in him public speaking.
Yes.
Some
tips.
Yeah, some tips on public speaking. No, listen, what he's talking about right there in all seriousness, basically these liberal Democrats, and I do appreciate the fact that the former president didn't personalize his criticisms of Tim Scott. And he wanted to make that clear.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Right.
I think he was nice about it.
Yeah.
But what he's saying is, I think, wrong. He's saying, basically, he's saying you can't be a conservative and understand the plight of black Americans. Even if you're a black conservative, Clarence Thomas or Thomas Sowell or in this case, Tim Scott, these folks, they don't basically they if you're a conservative, you can't be if you're a black American, you can't be a conservative. And what Tim Scott has said is, yes, you can. Because America is now the land of opportunity for everybody. Yes. Nobody's denying past injustices in our country's history against African Americans, but that's not the way it is today. I found it very ironic this is coming from an African American man who was twice elected president of the United States, yes. The most powerful office in America, twice elected. And he's saying there's systematic racism. You can't have that both ways.
No.
But Sonny Hostin on The View.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That powerhouse of intellectual powerhouse.
Yeah.
So I disagree with him about what I'm about to say. But Sonny Hostin said that people like this is when Tim Scott was actually on The View. And she said, well, people like you and President Obama, whatever, these that you mention, they're the exception, not the rule. That's her argument. And to me, there are two extremes on the issue of race. There are those who deny that there was ever a past like we have, okay? They just deny it, okay? And then on the other side of the extreme, this continuum, the other extreme, which we're getting from the left, including former President Barack Obama, they're saying there is never going to be a time when we can forget the past.
It's hopeless.
It's hopeless. And that's what that's to me what he was saying is that we have to always talk about our past as if we're ignoring it. No, there may be a small percentage on the other end of the spectrum that ignore it or say it didn't exist. But you're saying we always
have to
talk about it.
They need to go on Oprah Winfrey's show to talk about this. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Oprah Winfrey's one of the most powerful, wealthiest women in the world.
She's an exception, Tim.
And
she's an exception, not the rule.
Okay.
Most black people can't make it in this country. That's what they're saying on the left.
That's opportunity exists for all today, regardless of skin color. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.